The A is DH is Billy Butler. So there's, again, not that much to overcome.
Who I also own in TDGX. Lay off me, Craig.
The Jared Lorenzen of baseball players.
Oh, no.
Well, to be fair, the sun is also blocked by Billy Butler.
Episode 70 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. It's good to be back. I know we had to skip a week. We had been doing a good job of actually staying on our biweekly schedule, but only 1 week off is actually pretty good for us, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty proud of us.
We also started this podcast close to on time. So really, we're growing up right before everyone's very eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We're prepared. We're good
well,
to go.
Well, let's not. Let's
yeah,
not.
Prepared is a generous description of what's about to happen to everyone's ears.
It's rough.
Yeah. But another example of people growing up, the reader emails were pretty good this time. We sent out one reminder asking people for emails. We got six or seven pretty good ones that we're going to rattle through. So that'll be the bulk of this show. And then at the end, we'll come back and give you guys 10, 15 minutes of sort of a current prospect talk update. Just guys who have done really well, who have been promoted, guys who have Kyle Zimmer's shoulder, things of that nature. So we'll start off with our first reader email of this installment. And this reader email is from Simon. It's from Simon. Simon says, I'm unexpectedly challenging in my first year in an established dynasty league. It's a 50-man roster with 30 MLB and 20 minor league slots. I'm definitely stronger in pitching than hitting. The guy with David Ortiz has him on the trading block and isn't competing. My problem is that I'm new to dynasty, and I find coming up with trade offers difficult, especially with a guy who's entering his retirement year. Or is in his retirement year. He said, I might have a shot at cashing this year, so I am quote-unquote bargain hunting. What would be a reasonable offer for Ortiz? Is someone like Lorenzen too much? Caprellian or Blackburn? I don't want to insult the Ortiz owner. Kind regards, Simon. So, Craig, if for once in your life you were going to try not to insult someone, what do you think you would start this offer with?
None of the names mentioned.
That would be insulting.
Yeah, any of the names that... I mean, here's the thing. Caprellian was actually kind of generating some buzz. He had added a bunch of velocity to his fastball. And if he kind of retains that, you know, it's a little bit more of a legitimate offer. But even so, you kind of want to aim a little bit higher. Blackburn, you know, despite Brett's hardest and highest hopes, is not anything except nominally a major leaguer at this point. And
the saddest thing is that I didn't even think he's fallen so far. I thought he was talking about Nick.
Oh, God.
Oh, a Nick Blackburn reference. Wow. That is something.
Yeah, well, and with Lorenzen, he might make more noise with a Jared Lorenzen offer than a... That's a football reference for some of you.
It's a big boy.
Yeah, that's the Pillsbury Throw Boy.
Which is one of the better nicknames in sports.
Yeah, it really is. But yeah, Michael Lorenzen is not good and isn't going to get you anywhere. I understand that you're only buying 4 months, but you're buying 4 months of a guy who's currently hitting 312, 391, 652. And, you know, based on his past few years, it's a little bit of an overstatement of his abilities, but it's not by much. So I think you have to aim higher. I know, Brett, you know, you got a ton of flack for Ortiz's ranking in the top 500, which I wholeheartedly support. I think it's tough when you're talking about one-year guys, but just the guys around him on your top 500, you're looking at right behind him was Josh Bell, Daniel Norris, Andrew Miller, Dan Vogelbach, Cody Reed, if you're talking about the Reds, Cody Reed, if you're talking about prospects, I think those are a little more reasonable. I understand it's a limited buy, but you're getting impact talent, and I think you can probably get away with trading one pretty good guy, and it's probably worth it. So there are certainly, you know, there's obviously a level of prospect that you wouldn't move for him, but I think if you can trade one, you know, I don't know, B prospect, B plus prospect, I'd probably do it if I'm on the edge of competing, and I think it makes a difference. Where do you sit, Brett?
Yeah, I mean, Ortiz is a no doubt top 50 player right now, and he looks every bit of it. The weird thing is that even with him staying great and even being slightly better this year than I think most people would have thought, his value goes down every day you don't either trade him or trade for him, just because he's one day closer to retirement. But yeah, I would, if I was competing and needed a bat, I would trade just about any non-top 50 prospect for him right now without hesitation. He's that good, and he's that impactful in a short period of time. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think I get the temptation to want to sort of wait out the Ortiz owner because of what you said, Brett. You know, so this is a much more time-sensitive trade situation than a lot of the trades that we talk about on this podcast. So there might be the temptation to think that, you know, you can kind of bleed out the clock a little bit and maybe get, you know, a top, someone just outside the top 100 you can send for Ortiz if you wait another few weeks. But A, that's another few weeks of Ortiz's stats that you're losing. And B, you're just opening the door for someone else to pop in with a respectable offer. So I think when you also factor in the timing, Brett, you're exactly right. You got to just pull the trigger on a prospect in the 80 to 60 range or something.
Mm-hmm.
We'll move on to the second reader email, which this week is from Bobby. And it's a strategy question, so Brett, it's going to go to you. Bobby asks, I'm in a situation in a pretty deep 20-team league with 12-man benches. This league also has 9 pitching spots in the starting roster, 6 starters and 3 relievers. He's tried to keep as many as 10 prospects at once, maybe with one MLB hitter and pitcher each, but the catch-22 here is that he's in win-now mode, and he is finding that as his team is competitive, he's being out-counting statted by inferior contenders who don't keep prospects. He said this is probably a common issue for every Dynasty League owner, so he wants to know how you would handle constructing a bench in this sort of Dynasty League.
The biggest question that I have reading this is whether there are daily moves or not. And that kind of changes my answer quite a bit. If you're in win now mode and you have a 12-man bench and you have daily moves, you're just giving away at bats and innings if you don't have probably at least 6 to 8 major league bench players. And, you know, in a league like this where there's no specific farm system, I mean, you're not going to get yourself in too much trouble by not hanging on to those non-top 100 prospects, just because there's no really easy place to put them if you are going for it. If it's a weekly transaction league like TDGX, I would say you want to have at least 3 to 5 major leaguers. You can't be afraid to cut your worst or second worst prospect when you see something that gives you even a marginal improvement. Just because, you know, the guys that you're hanging on to, the guys that you think are important when you get to that add drop page, are just not going to be that important. You know, these are players like, I don't know, what's a good example of a non-top 100 prospect that people probably don't want to drop that they should feel comfortable dropping? Either you guys have a name that comes to mind?
I feel like anyone who was a top 100 prospect last year. Because people react very slowly.
I was pulling up my, I don't, for me, like I'm pulling up my TDGX. I have Francisco Mejia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's off to a good start this year, but, you know, realistically, droppable.
How about Max Fried?
Yeah. He was a 5 ERA right now.
Yeah. Yeah. There are loads of these guys. Yeah. Hunter Harvey.
Right.
Oh, yeah, so absolutely. Sad.
Matt Olson. Yeah, it's these are not players that are going to come back and bite you, most likely. And if they do, then pat yourself on the back for having the foresight to have rostered them in the first place. But if you're going to go for it, don't go for it. If you're going to go for it, go for it. Don't half-ass it.
But
in the words of Ron Swanson, never half-ass two things, whole-ass one thing.
Yes.
The other thing that you can do is pair these prospects with an existing player on your roster and try and get better. Or, you know, so you're just being more efficient in the use of your roster space rather than straight up cutting them. You know, you make a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1 and try and get someone, you know, a little more useful.
Sure. No, that's absolutely
good. But if that doesn't work, then you cut them. I mean, it's just what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like there's much room for contention on this one. So we'll move on to the third question of the week, which is from Matt. Matt says, what are the chances that Swihart contributes as a major league catcher? I assume it will be dependent on a trade at this point. Am I being too dramatic? Broken Swihearted. I'll take this one because, you know, I don't really often get a chance to talk about Red Sox on this podcast. You are being a little bit too dramatic. I'm not happy with the way the Red Sox are handling Swihart. I don't agree with it. You know, I think if you send someone with his upside down to work on catching, that player should just focus on catching, and you shouldn't screw with the development by also trying him in the outfield at this stage. But to suggest that he's not going to get any major league time as a catcher, I'm super not willing to go there. He's still catching the majority of the games at AAA. You know, the Red Sox are another Ryan Hannigan broken hand, which happens like 4 times a season, away from calling Swihart back. And, you know, even if he ends up as someone who spends the majority of his time in left field or first base or something, he's not so bad behind the plate that he's not going to get the minimum starts there to qualify in fantasy leagues. I mean, he's not even that bad of a defender behind the plate. He's just nowhere near as good as Christian Vasquez. So sure, like you said, a trade is certainly one path for him to get playing time. But even if he stays in Boston and sees most of his starts as a left fielder, you know, I'm confident he's going to be acquiring 20 games behind the plate a year for a while. Am I blinded by my Swihart love, Craig?
No, I think that's exactly right. I thought it was a little dramatic, and I think there's certainly room for him to contribute on the Red Sox going forward, even at catcher. So I defer to you on Red Sox matters for the most part, but I also think you're dead on this one.
Yeah, I don't really feel the need to jump in too much here, other than to say that I think Swihart is a pretty nice trade target at this point. I think his owner is probably pretty frustrated with the situation and might be willing to do something that he or she might regret.
I just made DJ Short a trade offer for TDGX the other day and was told he wasn't available. So
yeah,
you're right.
DJ is a smart man.
Unfortunately. But yeah, that's a great point. I think Swihart is absolutely a very strong buy low-ish candidate in Dynasty Leagues right now. This has been way too, like, pleasant. Remember back in the early days of Tino where people used to get mad at us for agreeing?
Yeah. Oh, those were the days.
Yeah, well, last podcast you got mad at Brett and I for talking for, like, 7.5 minutes about something that didn't matter, so.
To be fair, we do that every other episode.
True.
It's usually contained to, like, 3.5 minutes. It was pretty rough last time. Okay, well, maybe we can argue over a question from friend of the podcast, Rotolando, who eloquently asks, what the hell do I do with Ruzny Castillo and Hector Oliveira? Two not very promising-looking post-Cuban hype prospects, if you can put the hyphen in the wrong place. So, Craig, what are you doing with Castillo and Oliveira?
Well, I think Oliveira technically can be DL'd in a lot of leagues. I know that I can do that in one of my leagues that I have him in located on CBS. So that is what I'm doing with him. I think he's probably pretty cuttable if that decision is being forced upon you. He wasn't doing very well to begin with, and then I imagine he's going to be facing a suspension whenever MLB gets around to issuing a ruling on his case. I think Castillo's a little bit harder, although at this point he's not doing well at all in Pawtucket, and he's 28, and he's just not been as good as anyone thought he would be. I wish I had some, you know, brilliant insight, but I think these are probably situations that are not too dissimilar from the question that, you know, that when we were just talking about X top 100 prospects or borderline top 100 prospects, these are probably guys you can let go of if you're in a roster bind. I don't see them really returning, especially Oliveira, because I honestly at this point just don't think he's very good. And I think for Castillo, the issue is, correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, but he can't hit breaking balls at all, right?
He's super, super long swing.
Yeah.
Issues with breaking ball recognition, and then also issues with catching up to premium velocity, which is not the best. That's not the best combination.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, if that's, you know, we're playing a game centered around offensive contributions. So that's a problem. And yeah. I think you probably let it go.
And the last, the last email we read talked about needing a change of scenery for a player to have value. I think that is the case with Castillo if you're ever going to get anything out of him. It wouldn't shock me to see the Red Sox give him one more chance just because Brock Holt has performed pretty poorly in left field. But
you're going to get Matt Collins mad at you.
I didn't say Brock Holt's bad. I said he's performed not Brock Holt-like. But Castillo, the Red Sox clearly have no faith in Castillo. I mean, they didn't even start him in the majors this season, and he's done nothing in AAA to make them look foolish for that. So he is definitely someone who is, you know, going to need someone who's not contending is going to need to take a flyer on him for him to get regular plate appearances moving forward.
So who of these two would you rather own at this point, Castillo or Oliveira?
I'd take Castillo pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think I would as well if I can't pick neither.
He's younger, and that's all I've got.
Yeah.
I would take Oliveira over Castillo right now. I think Oliveira is a better natural hitter, and I think he will be suspended.
That's an interesting choice of words.
Yeah, to be fair, everything is a pretty interesting choice of words when it comes to Oliveira. I think he is, yeah, he's a more natural hitter, and I think he's going to be suspended for less time than Castillo is going to be in the minors. He's also got more interesting eligibility.
Yeah, I mean, it's not crazy just because neither of them.
Does he right now? He's only going to play in the outfield, right?
Well, he still has third base eligibility for this year if he gets back on the field, and I'm not convinced that he's resigned to the outfield forever. You know, he's still capable of playing either second or third if they want to put him there.
Yeah. He's just not really capable of hitting. So,
no, he might not be capable of hitting, but
neither is Rusnik. So I'm not trying to pull one over on you. It's a bad choice.
I think Brett would clearly be wrong if Rusnik was hitting for any power, but that's not the case. And guys, do you know who else lacks power?
Oh boy, is this a transition?
Who have not signed up for Loot Crate lack power.
that is exquisite, man.
What is Loot Crate? I hear everybody. George, what is Loot Crate? George just asked on GChat. You couldn't see him. Well, Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for geeks, nerds, comic book lovers, and pop culture aficionados. Every month, subscribers receive a mystery box full of collectibles, figurines, apparel, and memorabilia. Each box contains at least $45 in value. And that's U.S. dollars in value. And many items are exclusively created for the expansive Loot Crate community. Each crate also has a theme centered around major franchises, theatrical releases, and events. And ladies and gentlemen, this month's theme is power. And in this month's box of Loot Crate, crate of Loot Crate, I suppose, the theme is Marvel Comics, Dragon Ball Z, Warcraft, and the Avengers. So if you ever are feeling maybe a little too cool for school after listening to three guys talk about a made-up game with baseball players and you want to sort of bring it back to your roots and really enjoy the geekier side, we strongly recommend Loot Crate, which I know Craig has been using for years. So, yeah. Brett, do you know where people can sign up for Loot Crate? Is it lootcrate.com?
People can sign up for Loot Crate with a discount at www.lootcrate.com/BP. That is exactly where people can go.
And you should. It's a crate of loot.
The thing that really sold me on Loot Crate when I was a skeptic was how direct and straightforward its name is. There's no confusion.
Yeah.
It's not earned bags. It's Loot Crate. It's very catchy.
Get your Goku on. Get your Piccolo, your Nails, your Gohan.
Wow.
Craig Dragon Ball Z it up.
Just putting us to shame right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to just emphasize that shame is indeed the overall theme.
Lootcrate.com/shame.
Wait, that's probably a different podcast. I don't want to give them credit for all the people that are going to go
maybe,
to Lootcrate.
Maybe shame is the next is next month's theme. We'll see.
Probably. I think it's the underlying theme for every month. Okay, let's get back to the last two reader email questions we have. And this question is from Scott. Scott says, who are some prospects not on preseason top 100 lists that you have picked up or are eyeing? And then he has another question that we'll ask at the end. But let's just focus really quick on the prospects. Obviously, it's very early for this question, but probably not so early that we can't each give one name. Brett, who's your guy?
Ronald Acuna.
Dead fuck, Brett!
Sorry. He's an outfielder for the Braves. He's a pretty exciting speed, hit tool, a little bit of power, but not a ton. Probably, you know, maybe teens power at some point, but we're a long way from there anyway. And he's just going to start getting more and more buzz as the season goes on. Good plate discipline, good approach. He's in low A and he's doing very well. And you can stick in center field, but I know we don't really give a shit about that.
Ben, do you want to go? Ben, do you want to go so I don't take someone, or do you want me to talk so you?
No, I have nothing. I have nothing. I did not think he was going to take Acuna. Where are the odds of that?
Yeah,
I have nothing.
Yeah, Acuna is a good choice. He's like he's the big name. I feel like that's really like the fast rising name that people are focusing on. Mm-hmm. I'll go with a pitcher, and it's a guy I've talked about a lot, but Yohander Mendez is rewarding my faith in him so far. He's at high A, which means he's in he's in the Cal League, and he's got a 2.45 ERA. He's striking out 34% of batters he's faced, and he's walking some guys, but the stuff has been there. They're using him as a starter, which they didn't do all year last year. He had 8 starts last year. He's already got 7. This year, oh, that's right. George, thank you, George. He did just get promoted to Double A, but he spent his first 7 starts in High A in the Cal League and was absolutely phenomenal. So he's going to be in Frisco now, and so you know if he starts to if he continues to put it together, you know at Double A, I really think his stock is going to rise as a lefty, a 3-pitch lefty in. You know, in the upper minors, and I think he can keep it going. I don't think it's just his polish that he's succeeding on. His stuff has been really good.
Yeah. All right. So for my guy, he's not exciting, and he's also someone that I've spoken about, probably not in the past year, but I used to be pretty high on him, is Zach Eflin, who's now in AAA for the Phillies and has done quite well, and not the explosive strikeout numbers you want to see, but everything else is pretty strong. It appears as though his command has taken a step forward. So never going to be someone who heads up your fantasy rotation, but I think someone who in his prime could be a number 5 or 6 fantasy starter and someone who looks like he's probably going to end up getting maybe 10 or so starts at some point this year. So, you know, don't invest heavily in these guys, but if you're looking for immediate starting pitching help at some point soon, I think you can keep an eye on Eflin.
Yeah, I like that one.
That is
good. Okay. Well, we will wrap up the reader email portion of this show then with what I think is a pretty interesting question about what certainly qualifies as a weird fucking format. And this question is from Micah. Micah says, I'm in a fairly traditional 5x5 head-to-head league that pays out for first and second place. However, there's also a decent cash payout to weekly roto winners. I was wondering how this would change your strategy in terms of draft and roster construction. This year, I paid a bit more for elite starting pitching, and each week I'm grabbing a two-start pitcher off the wire. That's been working well so far, but I wanted to get your thoughts on it, especially Ben's thoughts, friend of the podcast, Micah. And he says, P.S., please bring back Mal. We all miss him so much. So, A, no, you don't. B, I don't know why you especially want my thoughts, but my thoughts are as follows, because I'm paired happily, apparently. I think I would just be uber aggressive. I don't know if everyone else in the league is sort of going to issue longer-term value now because everyone does want that immediate payout, but I would just go sort of balls to the wall. I always think it's easier to acquire old veterans in Dynasty Leagues because everyone is always looking to sell them off at every moment, so... unless this decent cash payout is really not substantial at all, I think I'd be pretty aggressive, especially in roto. I think I'd be pretty much not super worried about the Dynasty League assets of this part, except for like core guys. Obviously, if you have a Correa or a Harper or a Trout or something, you keep them. But I would be aggressively peddling prospects, I guess is the best way to put it. Craig?
Yeah, I don't know that I would change my strategy a ton. I mean, obviously, it's helpful to go get that money every week, but ultimately, you want to be... I guess, ultimately, I'm trying to put together the best team that I can, and so I'd probably just focus on the first and second place prizes and go for that and assume that if I have a team good enough to do that, it's going to win a few weeks here and there, and that the expense at which you're churning through your roster to get, you know, a week or two of prize money is probably not worth it compared to the overall prize pool. But I guess it depends on how the money shakes out. I mean, if you know, first place isn't that much more than a few extra weeks throughout the season, then yeah, I think it's totally reasonable to do what you said. But I just don't think I would change my strategy very much.
I guess
you go ahead.
I guess I want to rephrase too. I think if you enter like a long rebuilding period in this league, that's what I would want to stay away from. Like what I'm doing with CDGX now is what I would want to stay away from. So, you know, maybe I shouldn't say you would want to eschew all prospects, but I would not be interested in the complete teardown, just getting minor league guys because you do have a chance to get this money. Even if your roster is somewhat competent on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, it does, and I might be wrong, but it does seem this might be a redraft, or at least not that deep a dynasty, since there's a he paid for elite starting pitching, so it seems like it's a auction draft. So I couldn't really tell, but Brett, do you have any thoughts on the...
Yeah, I have a league that's not exactly the same, but it's a roto league that I play in that has weekly prizes and, you know, end of season prizes. And if it's structured anything similar to that, I just completely ignore weekly prizes altogether. I think, first of all, I hate leagues with weekly prizes. They're stupid. In a roto league, especially any sort of keeper or dynasty league, it just seems really, really strange to me to have weekly prizes. But if you're going to have it, I would just completely ignore it.
Yeah.
But so I tend to agree with that, but he said decent cash payout. Like, yeah, if it's $5 a week, who gives a shit? But
yeah, I mean, it depends what it is. I mean, if the weekly payouts add up to more than what first place gets at the end of the season, if every weekly payout combined, so say it's $20 a week and there's 24 weeks in baseball season? 26?
Something like that.
Let's just, we're going to agree with you. We don't know. Let's be real.
Sounds fine. Let's say 25. That's like 500 makes math bucks. Easy.
Say it's $500 of weekly prizes and first place is like $200. Then sure, go for the weekly prizes. But if that's the case, then
if that's the case, your league is stupid.
yeah, then this league is really, really stupid. But if it adds up to $500 and the first place prize is like $1,000 on its own or $1,500, then yeah, there's just no point of going for these small dinky prizes when there's really no great chance that you're going to get it, even with a great team anyway.
Yeah, you say that until the next month comes around, you don't have that loot crate money anymore because you didn't win any of those weekly matchups. So
it's true. Do you think next month's theme will be Enya?
Welcome back to episode 70 of Tino. I hope you used that break to determine what you would most like June's edition of Loot Crate to contain. So we are going to wrap up this podcast with some prospect talk because I feel like we've been focusing a lot on major leaguers or on prospects who have reached the major leagues so far this season, which, you know, as Brett pointed out before the podcast began, is sort of a necessity in a Dynasty League-based podcast because prospects haven't done that much yet. But now that we are 7 or 8 weeks into the season, we have at least some interesting notes to hit on. So we have a list of players we're just going to run through kind of quick. We might cut each other off and talk about other players as we go on. You guys know the drill. But one of the biggest prospect stars of the season so far is Andrew Benintendi, who hit 341, 413, 563 in high A, and was recently promoted to double A Portland. And a year ago at this time, he was still playing for Arkansas. So pretty impressive advancement through the system for him. Brett, if you were ranking prospects today, how much would Benintendi have improved his stock from your preseason ranking?
I think he'd have jumped up a little bit, but mostly, and this is kind of where I want to direct the conversation, is mostly because of his ETA, not because of his upside. So for me, it's been a really good start to the season for him. And, you know, however unlikely it was going to be at the beginning of the season that he could see major league time this year or in, you know, the first 2 to 3 months of next year, I think that's getting more and more likely by the day. So, you know, I'd have him certainly inside the top 20, I think, at this point, although probably in the 15 to 20 range. Ben, what about you?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right to me. I'd be skeptical in terms of him having a big impact this season just because the Red Sox do have a bunch of sort of not great but okay left field options, and they're primed to make a trade for a real left fielder if that's what they decide that they need. But I think he's, you know, a better than a push chance of meaningfully contributing in fantasy leagues next season at this point. And that's pretty exciting. What do you see his upside as? I know you said you don't think that's changed, but what type of a fantasy asset do you see him becoming?
I see him being more of a well-rounded. I still see him being more of a well-rounded option than someone who really stands out in any category. I think he can hit for average. You know, he's hitting 340 in high A.
Yeah.
I think he could be a guy who pushes 300 potentially, probably in the 280 to 300 range. As far as power goes, though, I mean, maybe 15 homers at peak and steals, maybe 15 to 20 steals at peak. You know, essentially, I think he could be Christian Yelich if Christian Yelich never becomes Christian Yelich.
I was going to say,
does that make sense?
I was going to say maybe like a tick better than Adam Eaton.
Yeah. Yeah, that I could see. Adam Eaton with a little bit more pop.
Right. Not the 14 home run Adam. Not the 14 home run version of Adam Eaton.
Yeah.
In a good year. Yeah. Okay. All right. I think we're on the same page there. Craig, any Benintendi thoughts, or do you want to go ahead?
No, I actually think Adam Eaton's interesting. I like that. Yeah, I like that as a kind of reference point.
Cool. Okay, so let's stick with good news for a while. Jameson Taillon is alive and pitching. And oh boy, is he pitching. He has a 2.08 ERA in 43 innings in AAA. He's striking out 26% of batters faced and walking only 3%. Craig, how excited are you about Taillon?
I'm pretty excited. I think, you know, for a guy who has thrown, I don't know, what he didn't throw in 2014 or 2015, basically, yep, in the minors. It's pretty amazing that he's come out with this type of control and the ability to miss bats to the extent that he has at AAA. I mean, it's not even like they, you know, started him back at AA and just gave him a chance to get his feet under him, you know. It's worth noting that, you know, he missed part of last year because he had a hernia issue, not because of an arm issue. And maybe that gave him a little more time to, you know, get his arm in order, similar to how, I guess, Matt Harvey missed, what, 17 months from Tommy John and came back looking as good as he kind of ever did. You know, maybe that extra time just helped his arm bounce back, and we'll see kind of how it progresses going forward. But I certainly think he's in the – I don't think it's a given that Glasnow beats him to the majors for when it comes to the, you know, the next guy that comes up, probably for Jeff Locke. I think he's certainly put himself in that conversation. And, you know, it's always scary to rank a guy with those type of arm issues as a pitcher, but this is a guy that obviously had earned it based on his abilities before the injury, and why we often talk about leaving a guy kind of in stasis when they have an injury like this. It's you don't want to judge them until you know how they're going to come back. It's really easy to assume that they're not going to be a little bit lesser version of themselves or some percentage of themselves, but you know, he's really come back and been as good or better than he's ever been thus far. And we'll see how that plays out over the course of the year. But again, this is why you kind of, in my mind, put them off to the side and don't make a judgment until you've really seen what they look like upon return. And we just published a Jameson Taillon eyewitness today, and we're going to have another one next week. We've had eyes on them, and both of those reports are really good. So it's not merely, you know, smoke and mirrors. He looks good when he's doing it. So it's really exciting to see him back like this.
It's great, and I'm gonna get a little hot takey for a second, but I would rather own Taillon than Tyler Glasnow in a dynasty league right now. I know I've historically been the low guy on Glasnow, and that hasn't really changed. But yeah, I think it's awesome to see Taillon back, and the quality of his command and control combined with the return of his stuff. I think pushes him ahead there for me.
I disagree. That's all you're getting.
Sounds good.
Okay. Next guy on the list, and I think this is a guy who would fit in nicely with the question we answered earlier about players who are far outside the top 100 who now are somewhat relevant, if not top 100 guys, and that is Ryan Healy, who, what you know, he cannot spell, but he apparently can really hit. 338, 409, 628 in AA, recently promoted to AAA. Craig, I think this was the name that you pulled. So give us a little background.
Yeah, it's nothing glamorous. I think he played third base a little bit. It's more of a first base profile. This is a better year than he's ever had. But just to give some context, he hit 302 last year in AA. He hit 285 the year before. He's got a chance to be a decent hitter, and his raw pop is probably above average, and it's played down in years past. He's already at 8 home runs through 36 games in AA. Last year, he only hit 10. So, this is a situation. I don't know if he's changed his swing at all to kind of get to that raw power a little bit more. And again, it's not anything that's huge, but when you look at the Oakland depth chart, you're talking about Yonder Alonso at first base. So he doesn't have to be great to be useful. So this is just a guy I think in my mind I wanted to bring up. He had a really good start, and to keep on the radar as an in-season ad that, you know, could work out pretty well. He won't necessarily hurt you in average and might add a little bit of home runs. It's, again, nothing exciting, but one of those guys that you can use to get by throughout the season.
There's no way he's better than greatest player of all time, Max Muncy, who I just picked up in TDGX. So
it's a good point.
Unfortunately, he's very blocked.
The A's DH is Billy Butler. So there's, again, not that much to overcome.
Who I also own in TDGX. Lay off me, Craig.
The Jared Lorenzen of baseball players.
Oh, no.
Well, to be fair, the Sun is also blocked by Billy Butler.
Oh.
Ow.
Merciless.
That's brutal.
Oh. How do you segue from that to Trenton Clark? I guess like well, that.
Sun is also often blocked in Trenton, so.
Oh, there we go. That wasn't bad.
Thank you.
That wasn't bad at all. Okay, so Trent Clark. Brett, why don't you speak to him? Because I think you were the high guy on him coming into the season. So he's been promoted to low A already. Is that correct?
That, I believe, is correct.
Yeah, he's in full season.
Yeah, so Clark was promoted, I think, last week. He's played 9 games at low A so far. He is taking a lot of walks, which is not something you expect a teenager who just gets to low A to do, but that's pretty nice. Clark is sort of your traditional 5-tool high school guy without any sort of monstrous tools in his tool shed, except for his neck.
Yeah. He's got a Troutian neck.
Yeah. Yeah, if Trout has an 80 neck, Clark has certainly a 75 neck. The sort of like Joey Gallo's power. The thing with Clark is that he's... The thing about Clark is that he is a little bit better of a hitter than you generally see prep guys starting out as. So I think that this could help get him off to a fast start in his pro career. He's someone who could, you know, who has gotten plus grades put on his hit tool. You know, so he could be a guy that pushes 300 in the long term, and if he, you know, he showed an aptitude in getting on base and taking pitches. So even in an on base league, he's someone who could profile really strongly there. The speed is there, but not game changing. The power is there, but not game changing. I think he probably is a guy who could come close to 20 of one of the two, probably not both at the same time, but it's a long way to figure out exactly what kind of player he is. But he's someone who I think will end the season as a consensus top 50 fantasy prospect, and we'll see where he goes from there. I mean, the Brewers are in transition, and I'd be curious to see how quickly they move him.
Good Trent Clark take, Brett. Good Trent Clark take.
Thanks.
Max Pentecost, do we really have any news other than the fact that he's actually playing?
No, it's great that he's playing.
He, I feel like, is a hardcore forgotten prospect.
Yeah, I mean, first-rounder athletic catcher. I mean, he's hitting the crap out of the ball in low A, but it's 5 games, so who cares? But it's more that he's hitting at all.
Yeah. At what, you know, Pentecost is, was a college guy when he was drafted. He's not particularly young. He's already 23. When, you know, at this point, who knows how quickly he's going to move, especially with needing some extra time behind the plate. But with, assuming he comes back and hits, what level does he have to hit at for you to put him back where he was when he was initially drafted from a fantasy standpoint?
High A?
I'd say double A.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy I thought could reach double A pretty quickly right after being drafted, and he's just never been healthy.
Right, but is it fair to assume he's... Like, I think he might need some ramp-up time, you know? I totally agree with you, Craig.
Yeah, no. He needs ramp-up time, but I think for me to buy into the point to where he was... Like Brett said, he's going to be 23. He was a college guy. He was seen as an advanced bat. I'm not going to – look, it will be great if he beats up on high A and hits at high A, but I'm not going to see him kind of in the – even in the shadow of the prospect that he was when he was drafted unless he's hitting at double A.
Yeah, this falls into the Andy Ibañez category of, you know – he's going to put up, I think he's going to put up big numbers in A-ball. I don't think this first five games is a fluke, but I also just don't think it matters very much. You know, but we talked about Pentecost. I mean, Andy Ibañez is the same way. He's putting up really, really good numbers. And you know what? He's a 24-year-old guy who was a multiple all-star in Serie Nacional. You know, that he should be destroying low A. That's not something that's enough of a challenge that should really change your evaluation of a player. But yeah, just the fact that Pentecost is back is extremely exciting.
Okay, so we'll move on to our last guy who sort of has the rapid career advancement that we all hoped for from Pentecost at one point, and that's Alex Bregman, who is hitting .330, .435, .691 in Double A. And who has started to play some third base, which I think gives him a pretty clear path in Houston. So, Brett, over or under 100 plate appearances in Houston for Alex Bregman this year?
Over.
Over or under 200?
Over.
Really?
Yep.
What's your number?
250.
Okay. Craig?
I will say... What was the first, was it? Did you go from 100 to 200?
Yeah,
I think under 200, over 100.
That's probably where I am. I think he stands poised to lose his rookie eligibility this year.
Yeah, I think there's a shot of that. I mean, they've already called up Colin Moran, and I think a lot probably depends on how he's doing. But Bregman's been phenomenal. I mean, we did talk about him on an earlier episode of Tino. Look, he's walking significantly more than he's striking out in Double A, which is impressive. And he's been phenomenal. I can't say a bad word about performance, but I still don't know. I guess the power has been much better than I anticipated, and we'll see if that kind of holds at the majors. But in my mind, I don't know what the kind of the carrying tool is for him as a fantasy player. He's certainly a valuable major leaguer. I just don't know what do you see him as, Brett, as a fantasy player?
I think the batting average is absolutely a carrying tool.
Okay.
I think it absolutely is. I look at what he can do just in terms of putting a barrel on the ball and just spraying contact everywhere and putting some over the fence. And he reminds me, it's different. I think he'll end up at a different position, but it reminds me a little bit of Dustin Pedroia. A guy who's probably not, unless he runs into a fluky season, he's not going to be someone who really hits 20 homers at the major league level. But he's someone who I think could potentially compete for batting titles. And that's where his value is going to come into play.
Just as a clarification, and I don't mean to argue, but without the speed, I mean,
yeah, I think he's
Pedroia was a 20 stolen base guy four times in his career.
Yeah, I think Bregman has enough speed and instincts to steal like 15 bases in a season. Okay. But it very much depends on how much he wants to run and he's nowhere near a burner, but he's someone who can take advantage of his instincts on the bases.
His WRC plus in Double A is 211.
good.
Is that good?
Yeah, I'm trying to think the last time I saw a WRC that started with two.
I think that's... Matt Chavez in Ben and Sam's book.
Probably. Probably. I'm still working my way through, so.
Yeah, well, don't. Spoiler alert, he's really good.
Yeah, seriously, now we got to put a warning in the podcast and everything. How long before the only rule is it has to work shows up in a loot crate?
Ooh, that's a, well, it's good for nerds, so probably not too long.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. It's pretty lightweight, too, so you can still get your... What was it, like 7 metric tons in a loot crate or something like that? I forgot what the measurement was.
Sounds right.
Yeah, I'm ballparking here.
A bunch of rubies, maybe some rings from Sonic. I don't know.
Maybe like Ruby on Rails. I think that's the only thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, went there. Okay, any other players we want to talk about? Or are we going to have the first post-hour Tino in, or not post, under-hour Tino in quite a while?
I want to highlight one player really quickly. But
I got one too.
It will be a quick one. We talked about Trent Clark, who just got to low A and has played, you know, almost 10 games there. So has Leonardo Molina, who is a prospect in the Yankee system who got quite a bit of hype for just strictly from a tools standpoint a few years back. And he's kind of scuffled in the GCL, but you know, the tools are still there, and he's hitting pretty well in his first 2 weeks at low A. He's someone who is worth keeping an eye on as a potential re-breakout candidate this year.
Yeah.
I told you I'd keep it quick.
Yeah, I still like Molina. The name I want to bring up, and it's a name everyone knows, but I'm just curious to get your guys' thoughts on when Tim Anderson might reach the majors. Let's play the Bregman game. How many at-bats do you think he's going to get? Let's go with Bregman. Wow.
You just combined our names. You helped no one.
Twice. Yeah.
Does that mean we're dating?
Yeah. God, I hope.
find two men who can... All right, whatever.
Yeah, find you a man who can do both. Are you having a stroke, Craig? Is that what's happening right now?
Yeah. Stroke, a little bit of indigestion. You know, anything can get... Anyway. Tim Anderson, number of at-bats, Ben.
I will say he gets 169 plate appearances. Ooh. That's a nice number.
That is one nice number.
I will say he gets... I'd say he gets 78 plate appearances and somehow 79 at-bats.
Hey, that walk percentage is 3%.
Yeah.
That's pretty. He's hitting 300 in AAA, though. It's just interesting to me because we've always talked about him being raw, and he's really just performed everywhere.
Yeah, he has, which is great. You know, the thing that I wonder how much run Jimmy Rollins has in Chicago. He's not doing terribly.
Yeah, no, he's been good. Let's not get out of hand.
He's been good.
He's been passable.
He's been worthy of not being DFA'd.
Yeah. And that's kind of what prompted the question is I just was curious, like how much run you saw Anderson getting this year, which I'm sure is relevant to people, but that answered
my question. And I said 169 cause it was cause 69, but I might go over that honestly.
Yeah, I think there's a decent chance he gets about half the year.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well, that's the thing with him, right? He's either going to get like 300 or he's going to get like 50.
Right. Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Okay. Is that good? Because I have something I want to talk about if we're done with the players.
Mm. Go for it.
I want to pose this to our Tino listeners, and I want to know what you guys do while you're listening to the podcast. Are you driving? Are you doing chores? Are you, you know, is it bath time?
Out of loneliness.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Are you just sitting there waiting for your loot crate to come in? What are you doing when you listen to Tino? And the reason I'm curious about this is because I have realized that the sound of Ben Lindbergh raises my blood pressure because I frequently listen to Effectively Wild either while stuck in traffic or running, which are two of my least favorite things on the planet. So even though Ben is very well spoken and has these sort of dulcet tones, and which is remarkable coming from someone who used to be deaf, I just can't. It infuriates me. The sound of his voice is starting to really infuriate me. I just want to know if that's the case with us and any of you.
Is it only Ben, or is it Sam too?
Yeah, I've thought about this, and it's Ben. I just feel like at my moment of like, it's like,
is right, it because he's Ben Prime? Is it?
That's probably like the like Freudian level of this. Uh-huh. I think I've just noticed that like right when the asshole on the Audi cuts me off is when Ben is speaking, or like right when I want to vomit because I've reached like minute four of my jog is when Ben is like politely dismissing something that Sam has said. And I just feel like all these terrible moments over the past like several months have the soundtrack of Ben Lindbergh talking about baseball.
Yeah, I certainly do not have that experience. I generally listen on my commute as well, but that's like sitting either on a bus or on the metro. So it's pretty, there's not much to get mad about.
Yeah. I do my Effectively Wild listening when I am commuting to and from work, and it mixes in well with the sirens.
So nothing for you, Brett, because you and I have spoken many times, always both been in traffic, and there's nothing, no residual effect for you?
No.
Interesting. Yeah. All right.
Well, traffic is like the least of Brett's worries. Do you remember the videos that we were just getting of him just driving through water?
That's
just
very true.
Like gallons of standing water just on the road.
Yeah, Newark, New Jersey is about as good at removing water from roadways as Alfredo Simon is at getting batters out.
Same murder rate, too, I think. Overall, so.
Wow. Well played. Wow.
Thank you.
Well played.
The best part, so everyone at home, so George records this and like helps us a lot and chimes in as we podcast and will find articles for us or make suggestions for players. And I made
videos
that
about Jared Lorenzen.
Right, but I made that Simon murder joke and I just get this little notification that says, "Oh shit, ha ha," from George Bissell.
Yeah, it's hard to tell whether it's an "oh shit, that was funny" or an "oh shit, I'm going to cut that out."
you should leave it in.
Yeah, he's going to leave it in.
Oh shit, what up? That's your meme. Your Tino meme.
Oh, guys, imagine if you got a loot crate and it was Enya themed. Welcome back to episode 70 of There Is No Offseason. As always, we're going to send you out with a little housekeeping. BP ballpark events are back, and you can go to the first one, July 9th at Citi Field in New York. You'll be able to meet and greet people like Mike Gianella, Brett Sayer, our own Craig. George said he's going to be there, and lots of other people from BP who have very easy to pronounce names. So go to New York and meet them. And then once you learn how to pronounce their names, please let me know. You also get a hat for some reason. No one has explained that to me. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in Crate of Loot Desirer Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night. welcome back to episode 70 of There Is No Off Season. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. BP ballpark events are back, and the first one for 2016 will be July 9th at Citi Field in New York. You'll get to meet BP personalities such as Craig, I'm really sorry about that, but you'll also meet Jeff Pastrnato and Brett, and George said he would be there. Mike Gianella. What?
Jeff who?
Paternostro?
That is not what you said.
What I said.
You said that.
What the fuck did I say that has destroyed both of you?
Brett, what did he... I can't even... What was it?
I think he said Paternostro. Like the salmon.
I'm being cyberbullied. This is not funny. That's not funny.
Not even close.
Because otherwise we'll never finish.
Holy shit, Craig is R.I.P. Craig. First he's stroking, now he's wheezing.
You said Paternostro. What is that? How do you even do that?
I'm pretty sure I've learned through this podcast that I'm dyslexic. I never had any idea.
That's spectacular.
All right. Well, we can try that again at 5.